so we are holding on Kofavov on the bays, right about the middle of the Amud, four lines from the bottom of the narrow lines. Okay, we learned in the Mishnah, we discussed in the Mishnah there's a difference between, as we've had in the previous Mishnayos of the Perek, a difference between a Makabel and a Choicher, where Makabel generally means an artist who is working on percentages. A Choicher is somebody who rents the field for a fixed amount of rent in kind, in crops. And then we mentioned in the Mishnah, we had Rabbi Huda making a distinction between that and somebody who rents for money. Where we have the case of the Mishnah yesterday was, there was a Makas Medina, there was a widespread thing that caused the crops to be destroyed. We said that in that case, the landlord has to reduce the rent, has to not charge as much rent. And Rabbi Huda had said that no, if it was a rental for money, then no. So now a case in that connection. Rabbi Huda, I mean, Kibla Imen Ramos. So, Hahu Gabra de Kabul Aral Mizra Bahutumi. A person once was Makabal land, meaning as a Choicher. So he had rented land with the deal that he was going to use it to plant garlic. Aguda de Nahar Malkasava, by the banks of the river Malkasava, an important river in Babel. Bizuzi, and this was a rental for cash. He wasn't going to give him X amount of the produce of the garlic, rather he was going to give him X amount of money.
This is a different one from the other Nahar Malka?
I guess there's a Nahar Malka and there's a Nahar Malka Sava, yeah. Okay, anyway. Istaka Nahar Malka Sava. What happened was this river Malka Sava was blocked. So blocked, or actually Rashi says not so much blocked, but rather rerouted. People upriver dammed it up, blocked it up to make it flow in a different way. Well, like this now, the garlic crop is ruined. It needs lots of water.
Right.
Also, a kamei de Rava, so they came for a din teretz to Rava, Amalei, and Rava says, Nahar Malkasava like other demiskar, it's not normal that this Nahar Malkasava should be dammed up or redirected like that. Makas Medina, that is definitely a Makas Medina, it's not something specific to him, it's not even something, Rashi says, it's not even something that he could have, predicted, yeah. Therefore, Zilnakile, therefore, go deduct from his rent. What about in the Mishnah what Rabbi Huda is saying, that if it was with money, then either way you don't deduct? Why they're asking, Lechora, you have the Tanakama against Rabbi Huda, shouldn't the halacha be like the Tanakama? Maybe they argue, maybe they figured, okay, but look, Rabbi Huda's reason is logical over here. It is maybe logical to distinguish between a Makas Medina that affected the crops versus one that affects the money, where the money wasn't affected per se, or maybe because usually Stam Mishnah Rav Meir, and when you have Rav Meir against Rabbi Huda, usually the halacha is like Rabbi Huda, whatever it is, anyway. Amalahu, he says to them, lest the chosh lahad Rabbi Huda, nobody is concerned about Rabbi Huda's opinion, that's not the halacha, doesn't matter whether he rented for money or for crops.
Reduction.
There's a reduction because it was Makas Medina.
Wow. So Rabbi Huda's logic is that because it's money,
you can say there was a gzeirah min hashamayim on the crop,
right,
that they should be damaged. You can't necessarily say there was a gzeirah min hashamayim on the money. But we're saying, Robert, because they're two different things. Just like we said yesterday, a person davens for his wheat crop to be successful, and
right,
barley was planted instead, not necessarily. Is the bracha going to be chal on that? Same idea in the rules.
Okay. Person davens for his money also.
Fine, but they're not necessarily. Okay. But if there's a gzeirah on the crops, it's not, doesn't necessarily affect the money, and vice versa. Mishnah said, "A makabel sada mechaveri ba'asara kol chitim l'shana." If somebody was makabel a field,
so that's
the halacha. Is the halacha is like Tanakama, as long as it's a makas medina. However, we define makas medina yesterday,
right,
or if you hold it versus
right,
all of the opinion,
right,
then there's always has to be a reduction in the rent. Yeah. So, "A makabel sada mechaveri ba'asara kol chitim l'shana." If somebody was makabel a field where the deal is that he's going to be paying 10 kor of wheat per year as the rent, the loxa, and it was damaged. It actually says loxa over here means that the wheat was shduchot, it was banged up by the east wind, like we talked about yesterday, and also koshet, and also they were poor, whatever was left was poor quality.
Destroyed, basically.
And, well, but the point is it wasn't completely destroyed, because there has to be something left, because that the Mishnah says, no sim lamitocha. The point is, the chocher is entitled to give the balabas wheat, the 10 kor of wheat, out of that very field. So the balabas, in other words, can't say, well, it's poor quality wheat. Most of it was destroyed. Whatever's left is poor quality. I don't want that kind of wheat. Go buy me good quality wheat from the store. No, this grew in your land. Therefore, you're obligated to accept that. That's included in the deal. which Rashi says, again, you know, we had earlier in the parak, we had Rapapa pointing out that most of these Mishnayos apply either to a Choycher or to an Oris, but not both. This is one of those ones that has to apply to a Choycher. Obviously, an Oris, each of them gets their percentage, and there's nothing to talk about yet. What if it was the other way around? The wheat was extra good quality that year. The choicher, the renter, is not entitled to say, well, I want to keep that for myself. I'll go buy regular quality wheat from the marketplace and give you your 10 kor that way. You can't say that. He's obligated to give him the 10 kor out of his own field. The Gemara tells a case. Now, who gathered the kabel aral aspasta? A person once was makabel land in order to plant aspasta in it. We said yesterday aspasta is some kind of animal feed, alfalfa, or some such thing, which Rashi points out based on a Mishnah in Bava Basra, based on a Mishnah and a Gemara over there at the beginning of Bava Basra, which we'll learn in a few months, Bez Hashem, that aspasta has a very short growing season. You can grow a crop of aspasta in 30 days, and after that, the land is available to plant something else. So the deal was he's going to plant aspasta, b'kuri desari. The deal was that he was going to pay his rent with a certain number of kurim of barley. Now, if he was just going to keep on planting aspasta over and over, where is he going to get the barley from? He's going to have to buy it in the market. But in this case, avda aspasta, the ground produced aspasta, a crop, no problem. B'chorsha v'zora sari, then he plowed it and replanted it with barley so that he could use some of that barley to pay his rent. V'loku hanisari, that crop of barley was damaged, and now the barley is poor quality.
By the Shidofen also?
No, by Shidofen or whatever it is. The point is it came out poor quality. So, Shochor of Chaviva Misura, Deprost Chamei de Ravina. So Rav Chaviva, on the side here it says maybe Rav Chanina, from Surah Deprost, sent, which we learned before, there's a regular Surah and then the Surah Deprost.
Right.
He sent a Shaila to Ravina. He had a Gavna Mai. What would be the din in a case like this? Key locks are nice on the Teicha Dami, or is it like the case where we said in the Mishnah that the crop in the field ended up being poor quality? Nevertheless, the Balabas has to accept that. He can't say, well, it's poor quality, you have to go buy on the open market. Oh, he'd like. Or maybe not. Maybe it's a different situation over here.
What would be different here?
Because Amalei, Ravin answers him, Mi Dami, how do you think to compare it with the case of the Mishnah? Hosam like Abda Arash Lechusa Demara. In the case of our Mishnah, the land never accomplished the shlichos of its owner. The Makabel had rented the field with the deal that he was going to plant wheat or barley or what have you in it, and pay out of that 10 quart of barley, as his 10 quart of grain or whatever as his wheat. That's not the point. The point is that whatever the original crop that the Balabas expected him to plant is what he planted, and it came out bad quality. So the land never accomplished its shlichos. The Balabas expected that the land is going to produce X amount of, or at least it's going to produce decent quality barley, and it didn't. There you can argue, therefore, that's not that you can argue that Noisam Lamitocha, the Choycher should just give him the barley or the grain or whatever that grew there, and you're going to have to deal with it. Hacha Avda Arish Lichusa Demara. Over here, what happened? The original, in the case of the Gemara, in the case of the Aspasta followed by the barley, the ground accomplished its Lichus. What happened? He rented the field originally to plant Aspasta. And the aspasta crop grew just fine. The land accomplished its shlichos at that point. Now this choicher decided on his own he's going to plant a barley crop after that because he wants to have barley available to pay off his rent to keep the rest for himself. That's not the Balabas's problem. Therefore, yes, you can't make the Balabas, you can't obligate the Balabas to accept the barley from that field when the original understanding was that he's going to be getting barley from the open market.
What's the chiddush? How could you have sold?
Because you might have thought the fact of the matter is this barley grew in his field. Maybe he has to accept it, but no, this is different. Okay. Another case, Hahu Gavr de Kabal Paudis Mechabr de Esu Dani Chamra. A person once was Mechabal a vineyard to work a vineyard for somebody else, where the deal was that he's going to pay his rent 10 barrels of wine. Taktif Hahu Chamra, and that barrel went, that wine went sour. The wine that was produced by that vineyard went sour. So, Savar Rav Kahana Lameh Ma'ayinim Asnissin. So Rav Kahana again thought to say this is similar to the case of our Mishnah, Lox and Noisin Lamitosha, that if the crop was damaged, that they were poor quality or whatever, you just give him whatever grew there. You give him your 10 kor or 10 barrels or whatever out of what grew there. It's vinegar instead of wine, not my problem. Amalei Rav Ashi again. Rav Ashi says to him, Mi Dami. How do you think to compare the cases? Same idea. Same idea. As in the previous one, we were talking about two crops. Here it's one crop. It's grapes that are turned into wine, but the point still remains basically the same thing. The grapes themselves grew successfully. Afterwards, after you pressed them and made them into wine, then the wine went sour. Nothing to do with the land. In other words, yes. So the Balabas has a perfect right to say, you were going to plant grapes there, fine. The grape crop came out just fine. The land accomplished its shlichus. The fact that afterwards the wine went sour is not my problem, it's yours. I demand my 10 barrels of wine, not vinegar. You're going to have to go buy wine on the open market.
It's not the quality of the grapes themselves? No.
So, umoyde, Rav Ashi, the invid kadrum, however, Rav Ashi then would agree that that it would be similar to the case of our Mishnah if the grapes themselves became wormy, meaning while they were still growing, let's say, then it's exactly the same case as our Mishnah, Loxa, where the grapes themselves were damaged while they're growing, or if the field, if the grain in the field was damaged while it's being spread out to dry. We know the harvest is usually done during the springtime, barley around Pesach, wheat around Shavuos, and then afterwards they leave it out in the field to dry all summer because there's rain in that part of the world during the summer. And then Sukkot time, you bring them into the barn, into the silo. That's why it's called Chag HaAsif. While those bundles of grain are out in the field drying, they still need the land in that sense. They're not attached to the ground anymore. Actually, Rashi says the same thing as far as the olives that became wormy. We're not talking about they became wormy while they grew. Then there's no chiddush in that. After they finished growing, before you had a chance to take them, to press them into wine, they started becoming wormy. So then, it doesn't mean they were defective, but it means, in other words, it doesn't mean the grapes were defective per se, but it means they became defective during the normal period before they turned into wine. At that point, up until the point when it's expected that they're going to be turned into wine or brought in from the field, from the drying, up until that point, if something happens to them, that's still considered loxa. That's still considered that they were damaged in a way where the balabas is just going to have to accept them, whatever quality they are.
Yeah,
but we're safe.
Because it's still connected.
But it's not connected to the ground. Again, the bundles of wheat are no longer connected to the ground. They're just out there drying. Right, but they're still connected to it in the sense that they haven't been taken someplace else for processing. Right. Yeah, that's the point, in other words.
And therefore the balabas.
And therefore the balabas has to take whatever is available, even if it's poor quality. Mishnah says, Hamakabel sodom chaveri lezora sa'arim. If a person is makabel, If a person is makabel a field from somebody else, where the deal is that he's going to plant barley, lo yizr enechitim, he's not instead allowed to plant it with wheat, because wheat is harder on the ground than barley. It takes more nutrients out of the ground. Chitim yizr enechitim, but if the deal was that he's going to plant wheat, then he's allowed to plant barley instead. Now, what is Reb Shimon Gamliel oyser? Reb Shimon Gamliel says that this is oser. You can't change it either way, as we'll see in the Gemara. Now, which one are we talking about over here? Again, each Mishnah in the parak, except for the first two, is talking either about a choicher or a makabel. Which one is this Mishnah talking about? Rashi says this one is only talking about, this one has to be talking about a choicher, where the deal is that he's going to pay X amount of grain, let's say 10 quart of wheat or whatever, as his rent.
As opposed to the
makabel, as opposed to the oris, where it works on percentages. Because Rashi argues like this. If the deal was that you're going to plant barley but you're not going to plant wheat, we learned on Kuf Dalet, we have the case over there involving the guy planted sesame instead of wheat, and we said sesame takes a lot out of the ground, but it's worth more. We said that normally it's worth more. We have that whole case over there. We use the expression over there, lichush arav lichush mara. Better let the land be depleted than that the owner should be depleted. In other words, the owner would rather have something that's more useful to him, that's worth more to him. Sort of, but it's basically, I mean, what we said is that in that case, for example, you should have planted sesame in this case, the guy is only getting wheat, which normally wheat is worth less than barley, and therefore he's suffering a loss. He's gaining from the fact that his land wasn't as depleted with wheat as much as with shumshim. That's not how it works. So Rashi says, in our case over here, then, if it was an oris where the deal is that he's going to get a certain percentage and the Balabas is getting a certain percentage. Then Abirabi Rashi says, fine, if the deal was that he was supposed to plant barley, let him go ahead and plant wheat. Abirabi, the other guy will benefit more from it. Wheat is worth more than barley. His land is going to be more depleted. Fine, l'choshara v'lo l'choshmara. So therefore, Rashi says that necessarily our Mishnah must be talking about a choicher. Since with a choicher, the deal is that he's going to be paying a certain amount of a certain kind of grain, wheat or barley as the case may be, then fine. If the deal was that he was supposed to plant barley and he's going to be paying X amount in barley, let's say 10 kor of barley, he shouldn't plant it with wheat because then he's causing the balabas a loss. The land is going to be more depleted because of the wheat. And what is he going to be doing as far as barley? He's going to be taking 10 kor of barley. He's going to be buying 10 kor of barley on the open market and giving it to them. It's worth less than wheat. But the point is, fine, the agreement was that he's going to get 10 kor of barley. But the point is, now the land has been depleted without the balabas getting anything compensating to make up for it. That's how Rashi learns. On the other hand, the Ramban learns the other way around. We must be talking about an oris, but we can't be talking about a choicher, because we learned also the other day that a person has the right to say, I want the grain from my own land. Okay.
Even if the land is depleted.
In other words, the point is that in the case of a choicher where he's supposed to be paying 10 kor of barley, let's say, so he doesn't have a right to plant wheat. Where are you going to have to get, not only the land is going to be depleted, but also where are you going to get my 10 kor of barley to pay me? You're going to have to buy it on the open market. Okay, I don't want you to buy it on my open market. I want what my land produces. We assume, like we said the other day, that a person would usually rather have what grows in their own land. And therefore, with an oris, according to the Ramban, yes, it could be made to work. Because, okay, you know, you're getting a certain percentage of the wheat, you're getting a certain percentage of the barley. Fine, you can argue the same thing. The other way around, then, according to the Ramban. You can't do this as an oris. If you were supposed to plant wheat and instead you can't plant barley if you are an oris, you're not supposed to do that. But if you're an oris, where you're going by percentages because the guy expected to get a certain percentage of barley, instead he's getting a certain percentage of wheat, and that's as land is getting depleted, he's getting a certain amount of crop. Yeah,
but he has to leave his field and pay him with a crop that doesn't deplete as much as the other one.
Right. Yeah.
Well, that's the point.
That's how.
But since he's paid in either case in crop, why do we believe that in one case it shouldn't be good?
Because you're getting paid a certain percentage of whatever grows in this field. The other one is you're getting paid a specific kind of crop. Choicher is paying a specific kind of crop.
It cannot be any crop.
No, because that was the deal. I'm going to pay you 10 kor of barley, as opposed to an oris.
But generally,
that's how a choicher works.
It has to be a specific.
Usually, they make it a specific crop, yeah.
Uh-huh.
As opposed to an oris, which whatever crop it is, we're going to split it 75, 25, whatever it is. Continues the Mishnah. Tvur lo yizru en akitnis. If the deal was that he was going to plant the field with grain, he's not instead allowed to plant it with beans. Kitnis yizru en tvur. But if the deal was that he's going to plant beans, he's allowed to plant grain instead, because Rashi says beans deplete the ground more than grain. Steinsaltz points out in his Gemara Lechora, it's a little hard to understand. Many kinds of beans actually have various kinds of bacteria that live in their roots that actually help fertilize the soil, but he says maybe it depends on what kind of beans. Kitnis is a very general term and includes different kinds of crops. And we'll see in the Gemara also it depends on which country we're talking about. Different places have different. Reb Shimon Gamliel also, again, Reb Shimon Gamliel says it's also to do that. The Gemara says, "Amar Reb Chista, my time is the Reb Shimon Gamliel. What's Reb Shimon Gamliel's reason that you can't change, even if it's lachorda for the better for the balabas? He's going to get better quality grain. He's going to get something that refertilizes the soil more, whatever." Because the pasuk says, "She'eris Yisrael la'yasu avla." The remnants of the Jewish people are not going to do injustice. V'la'yadabru kazav. They won't speak lies. V'la'yimatz b'fiim l'shain tamis. And there should not be found in their mouths a dishonest word. Meaning, kazav and sheker. I'm not sure exactly. I think sheker is just a plain old lie. Kazav is like a disappointment. Like somebody expected something. Sort of deception, but in other words, like sheker would just be a lie, stam, you know, for that doesn't serve any purpose. Kazav would be like where you stand to gain something from it. Okay, I'm not real sure. Anyway, the point is that you gave your word. You have to keep your word. If you said you're going to plant the place with you, that you're going to plant the field with one, don't change unilaterally and plant something else because that would be violating your word. Yeah. Okay. The Gemara says, "Mace, I have a contradiction to that." That you're saying there, Shimon Gamliel says you can never unilaterally do something different like that. We learned this before. Magvis Purim Lepurim, money that's collected on Purim is meant to be used specifically for Purim. The Ein Medaktik in Medava, we're not particular in it. We said there that it means either the Gabbai Tzedakah shouldn't say, well, the Aniyim don't need so much for their Purim Soda, we'll use some of it for other Tzedakah projects. Or we said Ein Medaktik in Medava includes the Kol HaPorshet Yad idea, that anybody who sticks out their hand to Tzedakah on Purim will give them. The Ena Oni Rashoi Lekachman Ritzul Asandola, and Oni is not allowed to use that money that was collected on Purim, which is supposed to go for the Purim Soda, even to buy a new shoelace for his shoe. Elim Ken Histim Amaimin Anshe Eir, unless he makes a tnai to that effect in the presence of the people of the city, meaning the Shiva Turei Eir, the city council. Giver Reb Yaakov Shamar Mishum Reb Meir, Reb Shimon Gamliel Mekel, but Reb Shimon Gamliel was Mekel, and So we see that Reb Shimon Gamliel allows you to divert it to something else, right? Whereas here we're saying that not. Yeah.
Shabbos, you're not allowed to keep food, to say whatever you know from Shabbos to Kol. So you could
for Purim we're saying since Purim since there's a mitzvah of Purim soda, then there's no particular limit to it. Okay, I mean, nowadays, how much does that apply necessarily? I mean, sometimes we can assume that maybe a tnai is made that the aniyim can use or whatever they want. Okay, whatever. Anyway, the point is, Reb Shimon Gamliel is contradicting himself. I'm going to buy a timer. Did Reb Shimon kidemar? No, rather the reason why Reb Shimon Gamliel says is din, not like Reb Chista said that the reason is because a person has to strictly keep to their word, but for a different reason, based on what my Rebbe, meaning Rabba, said. Amar, namely, my Rebbe, which is Rabba, said, Haiman de Nichole de Tisbor Are, if somebody wants his field to be fallow, to be infertile, Tisbor Meloshan Sdebur, an empty field, Lizra Shatachiti Vishata Sairi, he should plant it 1 year wheat and the next year barley, or Shata Shesi Vishata Eva, or 1 year plant it with the rows going in this direction, and then the next year with them going perpendicular to that, north, south, or east, west, let's say. The point being, therefore, let's say, for example, the deal was that this choicher was going to be, Kabul, as the case may be, was going to be planting, where the deal was that he was going to be planting wheat. So what happens, for example, the guy, the Baal boss himself planted wheat the previous year. So fine, you plant wheat 2 years in a row, you're in good shape. But if you change and plant barley instead, you're going to weaken the field. Therefore, don't do it, even though you yourself think you're doing a good thing because barley takes less out of the ground, depletes it less than wheat, but you don't realize that last year you planted wheat, and therefore you're making things worse.
Wait, wheat after it is wheat, better?
Wait, we'll talk in a second what Tosfos says, but let's first deal with Rashi.
That's the first assumption.
Okay. So that's the idea. Why is Reb Shimon Gamliel saying don't change it? Because you don't know what the prior history of this field was, and you might end up messing things up. By the way, the Gemara says that this is only true, this that we're saying that planting wheat 2 years, that planting wheat and barley in alternate years, or once east, west, and once north, south, or whatever, depletes the land and makes it that it'll be infertile, only applies only if he did not plow and then plow again. Meaning Rashi describes that you plant, you plow one time after you do the harvest, and then you plow again, you turn over the soil again when it comes time to plant next year's crop. If you don't do that, then you have a problem. I've quoted Vitoni, but if you did that, after you harvested the 1 year's crop, you plowed to get rid of whatever's left over there, and the weeds or whatever that's left over there, and then
you see.
And then before the planting season, you plow again, less one bud, then there's no problem.
Let's say the beginning of the season, you plow your seed, and it's once you're finished.
Then once you harvest, you plow again.
You plow again.
Yeah, so if you do that, then you don't seed until the following fall.
Right.
Yeah. So if you do that, less sunbelt, then there's no problem with it. It won't ruin the field. Now, Tosfos asks the question, we know that crop rotation is good for a field. I would have a planting wheat 1 year and barley the next year should be good for it. What does Rashi say? That's what Tosfos says. This is a normal thing for people who work the land, for farmers, that they plant 1 year wheat and the next year barley. And I believe Tosfos says if they plant wheat 2 years in a row or barley 2 years in a row, it weakens the land. So what is it actually saying? So Tosfos explains the other way around. When we say over here, detisbur are, Rashi explained it sort of like we mean in a sarcastic way. If you want your field to be fallow, this is what you should do. Plant wheat, meaning it's a bad thing for it. Adrabba, Tosfos says, detisbur are means if you want your land to be so fertile as if you had left it fallow, as if you had left it unplanted for 1 year, which we know restores the strength of the ground, how should you accomplish that? You can accomplish that by planting it with alternate crops and alternate years. Wheat 1 year, barley the next.
So long as you plow in between.
Even if you don't plow in between. So therefore, that's the thing. That's why Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying, for example, so it's sort of the opposite of what Rashi is saying. Let's say the deal was that you're going to plant wheat. Now, Rashi was assuming that, let's say, last year you planted barley and therefore it's going to be bad for the soil. According to Tosfos, it's the other way around.
Yeah.
Last year, what if the guy also planted wheat? Now you're going to have wheat 2 years in a row. No good. You need to stick to your deal and plant barley. Or vice versa, whatever.
But if you
did the double plowing in between, then Reb Shimon Gamliel would not ask for less lumber because then it's not going to weaken the soil, regardless whether it's the same crop or two different crops. Okay. The halacha is not like Reb Shimon Gamliel anyway. Okay.
You can
change for something better. You can change from wheat to barley, which is less damaging to the soil. Again, according to Rashi or the Ramban, are we talking about a chorcher or are we talking about a makabel? That's another wrinkle. Okay. Tavua lo yizra and a kitnis. Then we said that if the deal was that you were going to plant grain, you're not allowed to plant beans instead. Masnil Rav Yehuda le Rabin. However, Rav Yehuda, the Amora, taught Rabin as follows: Tavua yizra and a kitnis. Just the opposite. If the deal was that you were going to plant grain, you're allowed to plant beans. Amalei, so Rabban says, "V'hanan's not true a loy yizra enekitnis." What about the Mishnah says the other way around? Amalei, loykasha holon v'holahu. So Rabbi Yehuda tells him that's not a problem because one is talking about for them in Eretz Yisrael, the other is talking about for us. Rashi says like this: the Mishnah is talking about conditions in Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is mountainous. The soil over there, the soil layer is very thin. You can very easily deplete the land. That's
not a higher Yehuda. I mean, it depends. Some areas are very thin, but by and large, though,
Eretz Yisrael is very mountainous on the whole. Most of the culture, obviously there are exceptions, but we're talking about by and large, Eretz Yisrael is mostly mountainous, and therefore you have the land could be very easily depleted. Whereas in Bavel, don't plant kitnis instead of tavua because it depletes the soil more. Whereas in Bavel, it's a very rich, fertile area. It's low lying. It's well watered. There's always new silt coming from the rivers or whatever. The land is not going to get depleted no matter what. Therefore, go right ahead and change as you wish.
So the din would be in Eretz.
So the din would be one way in Eretz Yisrael and a different way in Bavel. Yeah. So basically, it depends on local conditions. Yeah. Since we mentioned what Rav Yehuda was teaching Rabin, so now we're going to mention some other things he taught him. Amalei Rav Yehuda le Rabin bar Rav Nachman, Rabin Achi, Rabin my brother. He didn't mean he wasn't literally his brother, but he meant like my chaver. I want to teach you the following din. Hani tachli debei kitna, this cress that grows in a field of flax. So you have a field of flax plants, and among them, scattered among them, you happen to have some quest plants that took root over there. Quest is a kind of herb they use it for spices, whatever. Anyway, ein behen mishum gezel. There's no issue of gezel if you come and pick that quest because the quest growing over there damages the flax. There's more, the owner of the flax field is better off with you taking that cress and pulling it out of the ground over there rather than having it leaving it over there and it leaches nutrients
from him.
It's sort of like weeding for him, right. So even though the cress is worth something, but the flax that it's damaging is worth more. So therefore you're sort of doing him a favor, yeah. I'm the Salagvulin, but if the cress instead is growing by the side of the patch of flax, yesh ben mishum gezel, then there is an issue of gezel, because then, since they're next to it, they're not really damaging the flax very much. So therefore, the guy, the balabas, has the ability to say, I want that quest for myself. It is, after all, worth something. And and if the quest has been growing there for so long that it already became hard and it's producing seeds, meaning if it went through its full growth cycle, also yesh behem mishum gezel. Then also there's an issue of gezel if you take that quest, even if it's in the middle of the flax. My time, my dafsid acid, because at that point, whatever damage it's going to do to the flax crop, it's already done. At that point, it's not going to do any more damage by standing over there. If it once it hardened, right, once it went through its full growth cycle and has produced seeds, therefore you, a stranger, are not allowed to go and pick it. At that point, if the balabas himself decided, you know what, I'll just leave it there, and eventually I'll take them and use the seeds, then you have no right to take them, because you're not, at that point, you're not doing him any favors, right, by picking them. Okay. Another din. Amar Rav Yehuda l'Ravin bar Rav Nachman, Ravin achi, hani dili diloch v'diloch dili. There can be a case where I own a tree, but the peiros belong to you. Or that dili diloch. What's mine is yours. But diloch dili, or it can be the other way around. You own a tree, and some of the peiros belongs to me. Meaning, so Rashi describes, we're talking about over here. You have a tree that's planted near the edge of my property, for example. But some of the roots extend out into your property. Or all of them, actually, it actually describes all of the roots are extending into your property, or the other way around. So then what will happen is that, in principle, since my tree, even though it's in my property, it's getting all the nutrients from its roots through your soil, therefore you're entitled to the fruit, and vice versa. Tosfos has a long discussion where they explain differently. We're not talking about where the roots go, we're talking about where the branches hang over. Do they hang over in the direction of one field or the other?
The same.
Yeah. No. There's a big difference where the roots are, where the branches are.
Yeah, but I mean, the branches, nutrition comes from the roots.
Yeah, fine. But according to Tosfos, it doesn't matter where the roots are. It matters where the branches are.
If there's a strong wind, the branches will go one
way. Yeah, but we're talking generally speaking.
No, even if branches go one way, the nutrition of the branches...
It doesn't matter, though. According to Tosfos, that's not the key thing. Because we're talking, Tosfos explains that we're not talking about, like, Rashi is learning that the tree is planted completely in my property and just happens that all the roots grew in your direction. We're talking about the tree is actually planted literally on the border between the two properties. Nohug b'nei metzra, however, the people who have adjoining fields have the minhag. They make the rule that if a tree is extending in one direction, then the fruit goes to the one. If it's extending in the other direction, it goes to the other. Meaning, in other words, that basically you split it. You see how much of the roots or the branches, according to Rashi versus Tosfos, goes in one direction versus the other, and they split it on that basis.
What if you have 50% on one side
and 70% on the other? The itma, because in fact we have a discussion just that. Even so if you have a tree that's standing near or according to Tosfos on the border, so Rav says you go according to whatever is actually in the one field versus the other, as far as the amount of roots or as far as the amount of branches. Or Shmuel Amachokin, whereas Shmuel says no, you divide it 50-50 either way. So says Meitzvi, I have a contradiction to Rav. It says that if a tree is standing by the border, then you divide it. Divide it implies 50-50. Isn't that a contradiction to Rav? The answer is Tirgum of Shmuel. I'll leave it to Rav. Shmuel explained how would Rav understand this b'raisa, that this b'raisa is talking about where the tree fills up the entire border. Meaning, in other words, again, according to Rashi, the roots are extending equally in both directions. And according to Tosfos, it would be that the branches are equal, but you may have more fruit on one side than the other. You may have, there's 50% of the branches on one side and 50% of the other, but the actual fruit that's growing, you have 60-40, let's say. So he's talking my memory. So the question is, in that case, if the branches or the roots are exactly 50-50, what's the chiddush? Of course, you split it 50-50. The answer is loy tzricha the toletune lechad gisa. No, but the chiddush would be, let's say, most of the load of the fruit is hanging in one direction. Again, you have the roots or the branches are 50-50, but the fruit is 60-40 or 70-30 or whatever. Okay, still that copy of my memory. Still, though, you would ask what's the chiddush in it. Still, the branch, you go according to the branches, lechora. The answer is Maori Tamer, Omelette Ploeg Hockey. You might think that the one who has the 60 or the 70% should say, well, let's divide it longitudinally along the border of the two fields. It happens that most of the fruit is on my side, therefore you'll end up with a lesser amount of the fruit. Now, Kamash Malon, the Chiddush, therefore is of the Braisa, the Omelette, that the other guy can say, my Chotis, the Pagas Hockey, who says you should split it like this? Ploeg Hockey, split it like this, at a right angle to the border between the fields, and then each of us will get 50%. That's the chiddush. It doesn't matter. Since it's on the border and it's getting nourishment or its branches are hanging
the
over.
Border is not south, not east, west.
Doesn't matter. We've had this concept before that sometimes when it comes to making a decision of things, we had that back at the beginning of the Masechta, for example, with the talus. We have the case of the talus with the gold stripe, where the gold stripe is closer to one guy than the other, and we said instead you could divide it this way. Yeah.
It's interesting that Rabban Bar Nachman, he's calling him Achi. When Rav Nachman went to the Beis Din at Rav Nachman, he really told him off.
All right, maybe that's why Rabbi Yehuda Another thing. Amalei Rabbi Yehuda le Rabban Bar Rav Nachman. Rabban Achi, lo tizben ara desmicha lemasa. Don't buy land. Don't buy a field that is near the city, because then it can be affected by an ayin hara. To Amar Rav Abahu, because Amar Rav Abahu, Amar Rav Huna, Amar Rav. In fact, we find that Rav Abahu says in the name of Rav Huna, who says in the name of Rav. Also, lo adam shiyamad al sdei chaveda b'shal shaymedes v'kamoseya. A person is not allowed to stand next to somebody's field when the crops are growing in it, when the crops are standing upright in it before they're harvested, because he may affect it with an ayin hara.
Yeah, we don't believe on
him. Who's we? The Rambam is true. The Rambam is true. Doesn't bring the halacha, and the Rambam explains in one of his the Rambam doesn't bring the halacha in Yad HaChazaka, and in one of his shuvas he explains that this is basically the Gemara saying midas chsidus. It's not an absolute obligation. The Meiri explains also. The Meiri tries to rationalize it by saying we're not talking about that your ayin hara is going to affect it, but rather if the field ends up getting damaged, the other guy is going to blame you for causing him an ayin hara.
Ava,
basically.
They didn't have a string from Kiva Russell?
There is a concept of ayin hara, Rav Shas. We're going to talk about it a little more on Amud Beis. So, yeah. Don't buy a field near the city. Okay. I think Mark says, Amy, is that so? Adirabba, we find something that teaches us that Adirabba, having a field near the city is a good thing. We find that one time Rav Abba met the Talmidim of Rav, and he asked them, how did Rav explain the following psukim from the brachas in Kisavo, from the brachas before the Teichacha? We say a few of these psukim. We say these psukim also in Vietnam Machal Matzah Shabbos. The pasuk says Baruch Ata Ba'ir, Baruch Ata Basada, blessed are you in the city, blessed are you in the field, Baruch Ata Ba'yachol, Baruch Ata Ba'yisecha, blessed are you in your coming and blessed are you in your going. What did Rav explain in these psukim? So what was the point? Why did they need an explanation? One thing is because the psukim mentioned that they were generic bracha. Should make you successful in everything you do. Why does it need to specifically mention in the field and in the city? Okay. And as far as Boyacha and Seitecha, the Mizrahi on the Pasuk, it's one on Rashi on the Pasuk, explains over there. Usually you go out of a place before you come into a place. So you leave your house and then you come in someplace else. So why isn't it the other way around? Baruch Hashem Seitecha, Baruch Hashem Boyacha. And they answered, no, what Rav said is, we'll tell you. Rav said as follows. Baruch Ata Be'ir means Shia Beis Chasamach HaBeis HaKnesis. The bracha in the city means that you should have a bracha that your house will be near the shul, so you can easily get to shul in time. Baruch Ata Basada, when we say blessed are you in the field, means Shia Nechasecha Kroivim Le'ir.
I mean, just one of those blessings.
No, that's just, what's the point of having your house near the shul, is that you'll be able to get to that.
No, I understand.
Okay.
What do we mean that Baruch HaSabayu means only because...
No, not only, but that's one of the meanings. That's one of the specific brachas. Baruch HaSabayu, Shiyu Nechasecha Kroivim Le'ir, that your property should be near the city. That is a good thing to have your field near the city. We continue. Baruch HaSabayu.
Your field is also close to the shul.
Baruch Atah B'Vayecha, when the pasuk says, blessed are you when you're coming in, means, when you come home from a trip, you shouldn't find your wife, that your wife is a Sofik Nidah.
Wow,
now, Rashi over here says, Sofik, how much more so, the Baruch says, you won't find your Vada. Yeah. On the other hand, Rashi in Sanhedrin, this Gemara is also in Sanhedrin, says that, no, actually, it means Davka Sofik. Right. Mela, if she's Vada Nidah, okay, you know she's off limits. But if she's a Sofik Nida, I could have, but then maybe not. Even if you're trying to find yourself a Tatum or whatever, But Ben Yehoyada says a different quote. What happens, for example, she can be a Sofik Nida, let's say, because of a stain, because of a kesem. The kesem is not necessarily that it actually came from her, but you have to be machmer and say that it was. Meanwhile, then, you wait the whole period, until the whole time, until she's able to be tahor, and then, before she has a chance to, she becomes actually Nida, and then you wasted all that time, basically, as opposed to if she was Vada Nida, all you would have had is the 5 and 7 days, and you're good. Okay, onward. And when the Pasuk says, blessed are you when you're going out, means that your descendants should be like you. Yeah. And the Omalahu, so now when they finish telling them how Rav explained these psukim, the Omalahu, so now Rav Abba tells them, Rav Yechanan lo Omahachi. You should know that Rav Yechanan did not explain the psukim like that. He explained them a little bit differently. Baruch Atah Ba'ir, she had Beit HaKiseh Samach L'Shulchanha. That the blessing in the city is that your privy, your place where you go to the bathroom, should be relatively close to your table, meaning near your house, because that way you can easily go to the bathroom, because otherwise you can get sick from having to hold it in.
Right.
Yeah,
obviously they
didn't have
trouble
coming in.
Yeah, it would be raining.
Exactly. Aval, Beit HaKnesses Loi, but Rabbi Yochanan understood it that no, having your house near the shul is not necessarily a good thing. And why is that? Rabbi Yochanan Latimei, Rabbi Yochanan goes according to his own shita. Dramas Chav Tzias. Yeah, she says there's a more important point that you get a mitzvah, you get an extra schus for the walking that you do to shul. So if you live near the shul, it's not such a good thing. You lose out on that schus. Okay, so two different ways of looking at it. Then Rabbi Yochanan continued with his drasha, with his understanding of Sukkim. Fine, the Baruch Atah, okay, so Baruch Atah Basada, he understood it not like Rav, that your field should be near the sea, but rather Baruch Atah Basada, Shiyur Nechatzachon B'Shuloshin, that your property, your real estate should be divided into thirds, Shlish B'Tavua, Shlish B'Zeisim, Shlish B'Gvanim, one third in grain, one third in olives, and one third in grapes, because Rashi says you may have one year, one or another type of crop is affected, but like this, if you have two thirds of them in other crops, you have a diversified portfolio, you're better off. And Baruch Atah B'Vayecha, Baruch Atah B'Tzisecha, what does that mean? Shetei Yitzi'otcha min ha'olam ki bi'otcha la'olam. You going out of the world should be just like you're coming into it.
Wow.
Ma bi'otcha la'olam b'lechet, just like when you came into the world, you came in without averus. Afis bi'otcha min ha'olam b'lechet, also you going out of the world should be without averus. That's a famous explanation, yeah. Okay. Back in the 1500s, some shortly after the first Gemaras were printed, the Catholics got into the act. They weren't particularly happy with the whole thing, the famous thing they burned. They had a whole burning of Sfarim in Italy in the mid-1500s, 1550s. And after that, it took quite some time until Jews, and at that time, were able to get permission to have Shas printed again. The deal was they can get it printed, but only if there's going to be very strict censorship. Anything that might be offensive to the Christians, anything basically that the censor might think offensive. So they finally got this edition of Schaff printed in Basel in Switzerland in the late 1500s. The censor decided, besides that he took out various things in the Gemara that mentioned Yoshka or different other things about Goyim, they didn't even allow
them
to print. We're still missing many of them. Yeah, they didn't even allow them in that edition to print Masechta Avodah Zarah at all. Also, the censor decided to add notes of his own in various places in the Gemara. One of them was here, where we say that you come into the world without averus. He put a note over there, not according to our beliefs, because, you know, the goyim, original sin, all that nonsense. Yeah, so yeah, it was one of those chutzpah things. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, the bottom line is that we have a contradiction. Is it good to have your field near the city, or is it not? The answer is like Kasha Hodimahadale Shurubariska. One is talking about where your field is surrounded by a wall and a fence, so that keeps people far away from it. So therefore they can't look in, they can't give you an ayin hara. Then it is good for it to be near the city, it's convenient. Whereas if it doesn't have a wall and a fence around it, then it's not such a good thing to have it close, because then you have the problem of ayin hara. So, since we're talking about Ayin Hara,
So that means what?
So that means so then you're better off having your fields further away from the city, so they're not affected by Ein Hara. Okay. Talking about Ein Hara, so the pasuk that says the Heiser Hashem Imcha Kofeli in a different place at the beginning of Parshas Ekev, where the Eved promises, "I'll take away from you any sickness." Now, Kofeli implies the word Kofeli implies something which many different sicknesses depend on it. What is that Kofeli? What is that one underlying thing that's the cause of many different sicknesses? So Amar Rav Zu'ai. Rav says this means the Ayin. This means the power of Ayin Hara. And Rav Latayme, Rav goes according to his own Shita, the Rav Solik Lebei Kibri, because it happened one time Rav visited a cemetery. Obed Maid Obed, he did what he did. So Rashi says it means he knew how to whisper certain things by the grave to be able to understand that when he walked by each grave to understand what was the person's cause of death. The Oruch has an interesting explanation that what he did is he planted trees by each of the, he planted a sapling by each of the graves, and he made a condition. Anyone who's buried over here who did not die because of an Ein Hara, the tree should produce flowers and blossoms and fruit. Well, in the end, Omar, and in the end, he concluded based on his conclusion was Tishim v'tisha b'ayin ra, 99% of people who are
on a tree in a cemetery.
Maybe not by the grave, maybe not on the graves, maybe near them. I don't know. Okay. Anyway, Omar Tishim v'tisha b'ayin ra. He concluded 99% of them were killed by an ayin hara. The echad b'derecheres, one died of natural. 1% died of natural causes. So it's just asked the question, what about the people of Yosef, the descendants of Yosef, we've learned before, are not subject to Ein Hara, how come they don't live longer than the average? So Tosfos says, okay, the Eved arranges that they die of other diseases more often. Anyway, okay, so that's Rab is saying then that the main cause of death and of problems is Ein Hara, and therefore when the Eved promises to take away Kol Choli, it means the Eved will make you immune to the effects of Ein Hara. Shmuel says that no, the kol choli, the cause of most disease and death is ruach, is the wind.
The wind.
Yeah, they're the winds. So Rashi says, so one or another person, different kinds of winds, different kinds of are harmful to them. What kind of wind, what time of day it comes. Shmuel atayme, and Shmuel goes according to his shita, dama Shmuel akol baruach, because Shmuel says everybody eventually gets killed by the wind. I mean, so what does it mean in modern-day terms? Steinsaltz points out in one of his notes by his Gemara, maybe it's talking about the fact that the wind, that the air brings bacteria and germs. Anyway, so the question is, what would Shmuel say about people who were executed by the government, their head is chopped off? They obviously didn't die because of the wind. They died because their head was chopped off. The answer is, even them, Shmuel would agree, would say, are all part of this. Ilav Zika, if it weren't for the fact that the wind goes in and then plays havoc with their body, Abdullah Sama Bahaya, in principle, if it weren't for that, you could treat them with Sama, with a type of ointment that has the property of healing cut muscles. We'll learn about it in Bava Basra in the Agata over there, Rabba Baba Chana, Samtri. If it weren't for the wind, which meanwhile has affected the person and brought in bacteria or whatever it is, exactly, in principle, yeah, the wound gets infected, basically. If it weren't for that, in principle, you could put him back together with Sama, V'chaye, and he'd be able to live again. Rav Chanina Amazutzina. Rav Chanina gives a third explanation of Kol Choli, that Kol Choli means the cold. Because cold is a big cause of disease. Yes. In fact, we find Rav Chanina says, everything is in Hashem's hands except for cold and heat. Shenemar, the pasuk says, cold and heat are in the way of the stubborn person.
Shomer nafshi. Doesn't go according to the Rambam.
One second.
Rambam says everything is according to the Eved.
No.
It's according to the Eved.
First of all, that's more the Baal Shem that. But no, what we mean is, in other words. Okay. I think that Imam is primarily talking about what happens to human beings. The Baal Shem Tov extended it to include everything in the world. Okay, wait. Shema nafshe yirchak mehem, but a person who watches his soul will stay away from them. Right, so what do we mean by that? It's like, well, fakir, one second. So let's put your question a little bit differently. Rav Chanina is trying to say over here that the Eved is going to protect you from tzina. But he's saying over here, I call B'deshim, I accept the Sina.
Right.
So how do you, what does that mean? So Tosfos discusses that in a few places, because the Gemara is brought in a few places. In one place, Tosfos explains that it means, right, ordinarily there's cold in the world, and when there is, you're responsible to bundle up properly. The bracha over here is that the Eved will make it won't be cold, it'll be warm. therefore you won't have to protect yourself. In another place, Tosafos talks about that it means the Eibishter gives you the intelligence to dress warmly. So in this case, similar idea. In other words, that the Eibishter will remove the necessity to be able to do that. It will make it warm, and therefore, yeah. Okay.
You alter the drought,
I think, by the way, I think when we learned this in Ksubas, I told the story, but it bears retelling. There was one of the important rabbonim in Russia in the 1920s and 30s was Rabbi Chesdal Abramsky. I'm given to understand that at one point he actually applied for a job as a shiva in Temple Tzmimim, but it didn't work out. But anyway, he had a relationship with Frida Kerebi. He had a relationship with a lot of the rabbonim of that time. He wound up Rabbi Chesdal Abramsky. What? No, I don't think it's the same. Maybe it is the same one. I'm not sure yet. Anyway, he got himself arrested by the Russians and sent off for a couple of years to Siberia. They didn't give the prisoners any warm clothing there, and it's freezing. He says to the Eibishter, look, this Gemara is saying that Hakol B'Dei Shemayim Chut Mitzinim Pachem, the person's responsibility to protect themselves from heat and cold. B'Med V'Ronim Amurim, when a person is able to protect themselves. But I'm not able to because they're not giving me anything. Therefore, you have to do it. During all the 3 years that he was there, he never, not even once caught a cold, much less anything more serious.
That's a nice story.
Okay. Anyway, so the point is, Reb Chanina is saying that when we're saying kol choyli means cold, that normally you're responsible to protect yourself. In this case, the Eibishter will see to it that you're protected.
Did palm trees grow all around him when he would walk?
Okay. Onward. Reb Yosi ben Chanina, omuzut soya. Reb Yosi ben Chanina says that the kol choyli of the pasuk is talking about soya. It's talking about the waste of the body. The waste from the nose, mucus from the nose, and earwax, a lot of it is bad for you, a little bit of it is good for you. So when we're saying kol choyli, the Eibishter will make sure that you don't have an excessive amount of that which is harmful to your body. Rabbi Elazar says a fifth thing, that the kol choyli means the gallbladder. Means the gallbladder. It actually describes the gallbladder expands, it becomes inflamed or whatever, and then gall starts spreading out in the bile or whatever spreading out into the body and causing problems. Kani namihochi. In fact, we learn a braisa like that. Machla zumara. There's a different pasuk that says asirei machla mikirbacha. The machla refers to the mara. V'lama nikva shema machla. Why is it called machla? We learn this in Baba Kama. She machala kol gufa shaladim, because it makes a person's entire body sick if it's not functioning properly. Davaracha machla. Another reason why it's called machla. Sheshmonim v'shloisha chaloyim tsluyin b'mara. There are 83 different illnesses, sicknesses that are all caused by gallbladder problems. The kulam, pas shachas, the melach, the kitten shamayim, vatalton, and all of them, all of those 83 potential diseases can be gotten rid of by making sure to eat bread with salt for breakfast in the morning together with a jug of water. Gematria of Machla is 83, yeah.
It's 83. Yeah, right.
So Rashi, by the way, says over here, when we say water, it means if you have wine would be better. If not, then you make do with water. Marsha says that actually, no. The Gemara says, dafka water, because this is like Pachma Melach Toichel Maimim Mesura Tishta, like it says about learning Torah. Person learns Torah, the Pachma Melach Toichel Maimim Mesura Tishta. Person should eat bread with salt and drink water and then spend their time learning Torah. And that helps with it.
Now their bread was probably different than our bread.
So it's interesting. The Bach in this concept of eating pas shachris is brought in Or HaChaim after the dinim of davening and before the dinim of a meal. It mentions this concept of eating breakfast. The Bach over there brings from the Mordechai that's not just any kind of bread. The wheat has to have grown far away from civilization, and there shouldn't be roosters around there, whatever. The Bach and the Taz and a number of other Achronim discuss the ins and outs of that. Is that really correct? Is that maybe really referring to something else? But the bottom line to the box says over there, eat breakfast, eat pas shachris regardless. Even if it's not the kind of pas shachris the Mordechai is talking about, at least it's something. It's better than nothing, basically.
Now, pas shachris used to be later than our shachris eating.
True.
Well, you can eat it after the tefillah.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's the ideal thing. You eat a little bit before davening if you need to, but basically you eat after davening. That's why all these dinim are in Shulchan Aruch after davening. On a different note, by the way, the Pnimius in Yonim, it's brought in a number of places in Siddur, in Maimonim, in Tzemach Tzedek, and the Rebbe Maharash, and in Kuntres Eitz HaChaim from the Rebbe Rashab, that the Machla Zumara over here actually refers on a deeper level to Klipas Noga. Here we're saying that it's the source of many different diseases, because Klipas Noga, when a person is learning a Tanya these days, when a person starts out with a Taiva for Dvorim Amutarim, eventually it leads them down the wrong path to a Taiva for Dvorim Asurim. So how do you counteract that? You counteract that with past shachris, with meaning learning Torah, meaning getting up early to learn Torah, past representing Torah, the salt represents pnimiyat Torah, and the water represents Torah Shabbat Peh. That's how you counteract the machla zumara, the klipat
nosh.
Past is Torah in general.
Yeah.
Melach specifically is pnimiyat Torah, siddur. And then kitten shamayim is Torah Shabbat Peh. And that's how you counteract it.
Why kitten shatara is mayim?
Mayim is because in mayim or Torah. So we know Torah is compared to many different things.
Pnimiyat is also considered pnimiyat.
The Torah Shabbat Peh in general, Mishnayos, Gemara, Halacha, whatever, is all part of Torah Shabbat Peh. Chassidus is a different level of learning. They refer over there to a mimer. They refer over there to a mimer in the Kodesh Torah, like Sashbis Gris Melach.
Right.
Melach specifically refers to Pnimiyas HaTorah. Yeah. So, Tana Rabbanan. Yud Gimel Dvarim Nemar B'Pas Shachos. 13 things are said about eating bread for breakfast in the morning. Matzelos Menachamo Menatzina. It saves the person from the effects of heat and cold. As we just said, it also saves them from zikin, from winds, like Shmuel said, which are a problem. It also saves them from mazikim, from shadim. Umachkimas kesi, it makes a foolish person smart, because once you eat breakfast, your mind is more at ease. You're able to understand better. V'zoichabadin, if you have a din Torah and you've eaten breakfast, you'll be able to present your arguments more sensibly. Luma Torah l'lamed, the person will then be able to learn and teach Torah, because again, his mind will be more at ease since he ate. Udvarav nishmoin, what he says will be listened to for the same reason, because he has the ability to explain it well. The Talmudim is kaim biyode, what he learns will remain with him. Again, same idea. The ein b'sarim mala hevel, his skin does not produce an odor, a lot of extra sweat and odor and whatever. The niskak le'ishte ve'enim esavel ishacheres, when he has relations with his wife, then he'll have relations with his wife and not have a taiva for another woman. Meaning, Rashi says he feels good in the morning because he ate a little bit. Now he's in a mood to be able to have relations with his wife. Later on, when he goes out to the market, he sees other women. He won't be attracted to them because he's already fulfilled his quota for the day, kind of. V'horegas kinesh b'mnei, and also this past shachris kills the. Kina literally means lice. Steinbach says maybe it means more generally worms, whatever, that are in the stomach. Rashi says toiloi means worms. So kills stomach worms. Some say that it has a 14th benefit, that it removes jealousy and brings in love for the same reason, because when a person is on edge because they haven't eaten, and they're more likely to get into arguments.
The fuse.
Yeah, the fuse is shorter. Marsha says on a number of these things that the idea is, again, we're talking more about the idea, a person is willing to live on bread and salt with water, and I'll live constantly, but at least that's his basic meal. Like, he doesn't require a lot more. He doesn't require wine, doesn't require other luxuries or whatever. So it also helps with a lot of these things. He's able to learn Torah better, like it says in Pirkei Avos. There's no jealousy between him and his wife, and there's more love because he's attracted only to her and not to anybody else. He's able to explain better because his mind is not confused by wine, etc. Because the point is, he feels good in the morning after having had a basic breakfast without a lot of extra food. He feels good. He feels strong. He feels able to have relations with his wife, and now he's not attracted to other women, so therefore it helps keep the peace between him and her.
He has a regular meal, he's also satisfied.
But if he has a too rich meal, then he's too satisfied, he's too full and too bloated or whatever to bother with her, and then later on when he's out of business, then yeah.
You hear that? Is your wife prepared?
Okay.
That's true. That's
all right, so we'll continue tomorrow with more good things about breath.